Hey, welcome back to episode 10 of Black Tomatoes here at Black Hollywood Live. We are talking all things Marvel and the 10th anniversary. Stay tuned. Yes.
So, 10th anniversary.
Yeah, well, wait.
10th show.
Let's tell people who
we are. No.
He's like,
ten,
no.
Ten
I
want to
talk
ten.
About 10.
Ten and 10.
I
want to
talk
that's
about
all.
10 and 10.
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
That 10 was
and
hilarious.
10. Yeah.
Okay, so as Scott Menzel said, 10 and 10. This is the 10th episode of Black Tomatoes. I am your host, Carla Renata, and my co-host is...
Scott Menzel. Lovely to be here with this lovely woman.
Yeah. Oh. We're having a love fest here at Black Tomatoes today. So, 10 and 10, 10th anniversary of Marvel, 10th show for Black Tomatoes. I can't believe we made it this far. It's been exciting, exhilarating, exhausting, all of that.
Yes, it has.
But I'm really happy that we made it this far.
Yes. And every 10 episodes, we should like bring in a cake or something to celebrate.
Oh my goodness, my jaw's hurt.
I agree with that.
I started to bring in like a little cake, like a little, and I was like, oh, you're doing too much. Don't do that.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, you shouldn't have done that. And I didn't. But I wanted to, before we get into Marvel and everything, I wanted to just say that this week in Hollywood, over at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, we were celebrating the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival. And it's one of my favorites because they celebrate the classics, the silent films, the old film noir films, you know, the heyday of Hollywood. They celebrate all of those pictures that people hardly talk about nor celebrate nowadays. So it was great. And got to hang out with one of my favorites, Leonard Maltin, one of my favorite film critics. Met his wife, his lovely wife, and his daughter. I hung out with them. Met Alicia Malone from TCM, hung out with Ben Mankiewicz for a little while. Just came from a panel there called Growing Up Mankiewicz, where they had like this life-size version of their family tree. And I was fascinated by that because it's a lot of those bad boys. It's a lot of those Mankiewiczes. I was like, well, okay then. But what was really cool was to hear them talk about their father and their grandfather with such warmth and humor. It was kind of like sitting around a dining room table at a party, and they were just spitballing stories. It was great. It was really great. I also was introduced to an organization called Mostly Lost.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
No, I have not.
I'm so glad I get to enlighten you. So it's an organization called Mostly Lost that is funded by the Library of Congress in Culpeper, Virginia. And that particular organization, their sole job is to find out how to identify the films that have been ruined due to the nitrate acid in the old film.
Okay.
So some of the films they can go for a few frames and see. Some of the films they have no idea who the people are. They have no idea what the film is. So they've started this Mostly Lost Film Festival, and they invite people to come. It's not free. I think it's like maybe somewhere between $60, $80 to go to attend the festival. But they literally will show a film and ask people to just shout out who they know in the film or shout out if the film, you know, older people
yeah,
from that
yeah,
generation.
Right.
And ironically enough, they have more than 65% been able to identify some of these films that way.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I really loved that. I also went to a panel called Through the Lens, about Black filmmakers. It was hosted by Donald Bogle, who's an award-winning filmmaking historian. And I was so happy to meet him because my thesis in college at Howard University was based on one of his books, Blacks in Hollywood.
Ah.
So I was like, I get to meet Donald Bogle. I was really excited. I also met a young woman named Jacqueline Stewart, who is a film preservationist professor over at UCLA, and she's a woman of color. Didn't know she existed. I was like, yay, I met somebody else at the Turner Classic Film Festival. And right before I came in to do Black Tomatoes, I auditioned for Turner Classic Movies.
Did you really?
I did.
Very nice.
Because you know, it wasn't like it was a special thing. You know how at the film festivals they say, oh, come audition. So I'm a member of TCM Backlot, and they at 4 o'clock they had auditions, and they were like, you know, just say your name and what film you like, and introduce it the way you would introduce it if you were on Turner Classic Movie. So I did that. Nothing will probably happen of it, but it was fun. And somebody took a picture of it for me.
Oh, very nice.
I think I intimidated everybody else, though.
Here's the elephant in the room. How many more black people were there doing the interview?
Now, you know it was only me.
Well, yeah. I know. I was so maybe you should not doubt yourself then, because you might get it. Because
it was
what?
Just me.
They should be focusing on diversity, too.
I said this to them. I actually said to them, I'm like, and I met some of the executives at TCM, and they were mad cool. And they, every time I tweeted or IG'd anything, they would retweet it. They would like it. They were like all over my social media, which was really great that they were even paying attention.
That's great.
Was cool. But I just wanted to give a shout out to Turner Classic Movies Film Festival for having me there on behalf of AfterBuzz TV. There's a playlist on the AfterBuzz site. It's called the 9th Annual TCM Film Festival.
Did you go to the red carpet in the beginning?
I did the opening night red
Mel
carpet.
Brooks?
I didn't meet Mel Brooks because they didn't let him talk to anybody. They whisked him right through. They also, who else did they whisk right through? Martin Scorsese, they whisked him right through,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Did I talk to Mel Brooks? Briefly talked to Mel Brooks, but it was like...
Yeah, 2 seconds.
It was like 2 seconds. And then they whisked Martin Scorsese through, who they gave the first ever Robert Osborne Award to.
Ah.
So it was really interesting. If you get a chance to go to Turner Classic Movies Film Festival site and see what Martin Scorsese has to say about film and... what Mel Brooks in particular said about Martin Scorsese. Martin Scorsese was talking about somebody. Or was it Mel Brooks? One of them was talking about the other filmmaker, and they were going in on how these people, he said him and one of them and Harvey Keitel was following him around. He said they didn't know shit about film.
That must have been Martin Scorsese then.
Yeah. He had me dying. He talked for about 30 minutes, and he told story after story. It was awesome. And the opening night film was the producers, the original
one.
And I'd never seen that one.
You never saw it?
I never saw the original one.
Oh, it's so great.
So I saw that with Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it about Turner Classics. So now, Marvel Studios, Avengers Infinity War kicking off the 10th anniversary. Man, let me tell you something. I cried, I laughed, I gasped, there aren't enough adjectives to describe how I felt after I saw the movie. That movie, I was tired when I needed a cocktail after I saw that. I was exhausted.
Yeah, no, it's very rough. It's not an, oh, yeah.
Don't look at it.
Scott, move your chair.
Right, and then he'll read it out loud.
I will, hey.
And move your chair up a little bit.
There we go, all right. Sounds good.
Okay, good. So
that was live in studio. Got to see that live on the air. So there you go. You're welcome for that.
So you were saying? I said how I
felt
was, about it.
Yeah, no. It's a heavy movie. It's very different for them, and it was something that I've been waiting for because the MCU has never really gotten that dark. For mm-hmm. me, it's been very lighthearted, mm-hmm. and then whenever something serious happens, it almost gets ruined because mm-hmm. right away, there's a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first time where I was like, there's a lot of stuff going on in this movie, and not all of it's happy, and they don't gloss over it. They really focus on it and hone in on it, and I was pretty blown away.
I was broke down, but before we talk any more about it, let's watch this clip real fast.
Sure.
It felt like being at the Academy Awards or something. Every person had been in one or all of my favorite films. You know what I mean?
There was like a sea of people who I've grown up watching in one place hanging out.
There's a ton of fanboying and fangirling going on in that room with each other.
That was crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit like being drafted to a sports team that has a legacy of championship banners. It's a dream come true.
Looking around the room, like, what did I do to deserve this?
I literally am in dead center in the front row, and I'm looking around and going, any one of these people could be dead center.
I mean, everywhere you looked was another superhero movie star.
I think everyone was aware this was coming to a close, and we'd all been on this remarkable journey together.
Thank you all for coming. Thank you for trusting us. Thank you for joining this. It's been 10 years of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Here's to 10 more.
There was huge excitement and buzz to that day.
So, I mean, that's incredible.
That was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, this is a fascinating story because I don't know if you recall this or not, but Marvel started off at Paramount.
Oh, I did not recall that.
Yes. So the first couple movies in phase one of the Marvel MCU started off at Paramount Pictures. And the first Captain America was made over there. The first Incredible Hulk and what was the other one? Thor. Mm-hmm. They were all made over there. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was they wound up getting a deal with Disney. And they wound up paying. Disney paid big bucks for it.
Of course they
did. And then they moved them over here, which could be like a really bad decision in Paramount's history, if you really think about it.
That they gave up that franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would not be their finest moment.
No. And I mean, I know that there's a lot of money had to be put on the table initially. But it seems like it was well worth the battle of putting that money up front because these movies make so much money.
You know, I remember going to see Iron Man.
Yes.
And I was very excited to see Iron Man because I'm a huge, huge, huge Robert Downey Jr. fan. I mean, I go back to Robert Downey Jr. all the way back to, like, you know, those teen movies, all the way up to his Oscar-nominated performance in Chaplin. Him and Chaplin. Yeah. I was so upset when he didn't win the Oscar. But anywho. And when, you know, he has some, you know, ups and downs throughout his career, as most movie stars do.
Yes.
Of his caliber. And Iron Man, I feel like, single-handedly reinvented his career. It reinvented his career, reinvented his image, and it made him one of the most, well, made him one of the biggest, most viable movie stars in the superhero lane to date, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, he went through a rough patch for a while there, and then he started doing a lot of independent work, and then he got the Iron Man role. And I mean, for me, even to this day, we're talking 10 years later, that Iron Man, that first Iron Man movie...
It was everything.
And I mean, the way that Robert Downey Jr. became Tony Stark made it feel like you were just watching him. Like, he didn't even really, like, it felt like he wasn't even acting. He was just born to play that part.
And that's what makes him so good as Tony Stark, because you don't think that he's acting, but he is.
Yes.
And he makes it look so effortless and so easy, and he just draws you in immediately from the first moment he shows up on the screen. So by the time he becomes Iron Man, you're just like all in with your pom-poms going, yay! It was great. It was really something else.
It's pretty crazy because you look through their filmography so far. This is the movie Avengers Infinity War is the 18th film in the MCU.
Yes.
Okay, so we started off, and I think we should do this, go through the phases and talk about which one was your favorite.
You worked that out.
Okay, so for phase one, we had Iron Man, The Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, The First Avenger, and The Avengers.
Okay.
So, out of those movies for you, what would you say was your favorite, and which one was your least favorite?
I can tell you right now, my least favorite ones, two
of
them.
Well, let's do out of these, and then we'll go through the other phases. There's two. Oh, wow.
So, Thor is not my favorite, and Captain America is not my favorite.
Okay.
Those two are like watching paint dry for me. I'm just like, ugh, I can't. But I was saying this to Marissa, our engineer, before we went on air, that a lot of times with these MCU movies, it seems like the battle sequences for me are always like 10 to 15 minutes too long in every movie. I'm like, could we have just cut that 10 minutes ago? It's just a little too long. Like, I'm all about the action adventure and the fighting sequences, but really, can we just get to the point real quick? I don't understand. I don't get it. But those are my two least favorite. And Iron Man, of course, was my favorite.
Yeah. It's funny because I thought out of all these movies, there was only two that really stood out.
Which was
Iron Man, the original one, not the second one. The second one was terrible. And I mean, that one, they had Mickey Rourke as that villain, Whiplash. And I mean, what a waste for Mickey Rourke. Yeah. And that was right after he came off The Wrestler.
Yes, it was.
And it's like, whoa, what the hell? He came off that incredible Oscar-worthy performance to be this nonsense villain. I mean, just terrible.
Yeah.
But the Avengers, the first Avengers was really great because it captured the zaniness of it. It was another thing that really showcased how great Tom Hiddleston was as Loki. I
love him as Loki.
Because Thor, I'm with you. Thor is by far like
but
the
he was
worst.
The highlight.
Oh, and this new one? Oh my God.
He was
yeah.
definitely the highlight. Yeah. Him as Loki is definitely the highlight. But I was like, Thor, I can't.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Thor in the first two movies, just in general, was like, and then
it's like, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, and then Loki was the saving grace of those first two movies. But yeah, the Avengers, that was one of those movies where like you got to see the superheroes together for the first time. It worked so well, and Joss Whedon did such an incredible job with that. So yes. I feel like those two were like the standout ones for me, and the rest of them I kind of like, I could do without.
All right. And now we're going into phase two.
Okay. Phase two, we have Iron Man 3, Thor: The Dark World, Captain America: Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers: Age of Ultron, and Ant-Man.
I can tell you right now, Ant-Man is at the top. Ant-Man was so tired that they didn't even include Ant-Man in the Infinity War. There was even a joke about Ant-Man. And at one point, somebody was like, there's an Ant-Man. I hollered. Because I'm like, exactly. Exactly my point. So, by far, not happening.
Ant-Man is that your least favorite out of all of them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. And Thor, you know, I'm like,
Is it because the story just like, it just seemed like it was just thrown in there for like no reason? Like the character?
It was just a story and it just felt like somebody made up a superhero character because they wanted to make us. It was like if you or I decided we wanted to make a superhero movie and we just made up a character and put it on film. That's what it felt like. And I was like, I don't like this.
Well,
I don't like this movie.
Do you remember the story behind Ant-Man?
Unfortunately, yes.
The no that Edgar Wright was supposed to do it.
Yes.
And then he didn't do it.
That's why I said, unfortunately,
Because
I love Edgar Wright. Yeah. Baby Driver, come on.
Yeah,
I know. If Edgar Wright had been doing it, it might have been a different kind of situation. But
I know.
Anywho.
And then for me, out of this pick, my favorite was Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
I love the Guardians of the Galaxy because it's a little bit of every type of character in that film. You got the pretty person who's green.
Yeah, yeah.
You got the really, for lack of a better way to say it, the one person who's human out of all of them, who's just all in himself about going back in the day with his old school jams. You got him. Then you got the big, muscly, just dumb as a rock.
Yeah,
you know, we have all these different types of we have Groot. All Groot says is, "I am Groot," no matter what. Like that is whoever is voicing that.
It's Vin Diesel.
He's got the easiest voiceover job in the galaxy.
I know.
He says, "I am Groot" with different inflections 5,000 times. He is making bank saying, "I am Groot." It's hilarious.
The best voiceover role ever.
Oh my God, ever. Because he's getting paid on one line.
Yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy, at the time that it came out, the reason why I think it was so effective was you know, we were seeing, and I think we started feeling that superhero fatigue at that point, where there was a lot of these movies.
It was a minute during that time where it seemed like they were, in that particular summer, I should say, it seemed like there was a different one popping out every other week. Because they had Spider-Man and Superman, and I'm like, I'm going to need to not see another man movie come. I'm like, can we just not see another man, superhero man movie come out? Can we just not have that this week, please? I couldn't take it.
I agree. And I mean, the fact that they gave James Gunn this movie, who was I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he's a very obscure independent director. And to give him a big, huge franchise film like this and kind of let him run wild with it. It just felt so fresh and so different, and the pairing of all the characters was very odd, but it somehow worked. And the soundtrack for this movie was just incredible. I mean, the 80s jams and those.
I'm just saying, the Guardians of all the films, the Guardians got the best soundtrack.
Oh,
because this
hands down,
they got the best soundtrack.
Hands down.
Come on, oh please, Flashlight. Come on, come on. I can't. It's just they got the best one. All right.
Did you like Winter Soldier?
No.
I was not a fan of that one either. No. You know, you and I are going to get like a ton of hate for this, right? Because
I don't
people love Winter Soldier.
Look, this is what my mother says about opinions.
Yeah.
Opinions are like buttholes. Everybody got one. So yes, I have an opinion and I got a butthole too. So there's that.
My weakest ones for this out of this one is definitely, I'm going to surprise you. I actually did not hate Ant-Man as much as you did. It just felt like it didn't belong there, but like I appreciate it again because it was trying to be different. Avengers Age of Ultron and Thor the Dark World, though. I don't know what the hell was going on. Thor the Dark World almost felt like no one was trying. Like it was just like everyone was like, okay, I'm here to catch my cash my paycheck. Let's just read lines. And like Anthony Hopkins, it like, oh my God, it was so bad.
You know, this is the thing. I feel like with some of those types of films, I think that they may have started out with a really solid script and a very solid foundation and base to film the actual feature. But I think sometimes in the editing room, stuff gets cut that probably would have made it a better film. To pay homage to the editors. Like I think that sometimes stuff just gets lost in the editing. And then by the time we see it, it's like, what was that? Oh, why did that happen? Oh, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked Anthony Hopkins in that movie, but I felt like, really? Because he was there like, what, 2 seconds?
Yeah, I know.
I was like, I don't know how I feel
about it. It's wasted. Wasted. You know, like, why would you put such an iconic person in this movie
and
not
use
it?
Maybe he wanted to do it. I mean, it was something.
How about Idris Elba? Idris Elba in these movies sucks, too. Like, he has nothing to do.
Yeah, him, too. But but maybe with both of those actors, because they're both British, maybe with both of them, they just wanted to be in a superhero movie, and that was the only thing that was coming their way. So maybe they were like, yo, ain't nobody else coming to me with a superhero movie, so I'll do this one and, you know, just get my face in there real quick. Because I hated what they did to him in this one, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay. And then phase three was Civil War, Doctor Strange, Guardians 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok, and, of course, Black Panther.
Now, you know... you know I'm going to say Black Panther right off the bat. Like,
right,
Black Panther
right.
was the best one. And which brings me to this point. I feel like Avengers Infinity War is kind of sort of riding off the coattails of the success of Black Panther just a little teeny tiny bit.
Yes.
I'm just going to put that out there and say that because that's what I think.
Well, when they go to Wakanda in this movie, I mean, I went to go see the movie again
yesterday. I got a lot to say about that.
Okay, but when they go to Wakanda in this movie and I saw it at a press screening and then I saw it last night again, because I like to be prepared for you guys. the thing is... When that scene happens, I mean, the applause that it gets is just incredible.
Just
it's like that and the Thor scene is really the biggest applause of the movie.
And that brings me to this point.
Sure.
This Avengers Infinity War film is straight up for Marvel Cinematic Universe fans. If you are not a Marvel Cinematic Universe fan, you will probably find some things wrong with that film. But if you are a Marvel fan, like hardcore to your gut fan... You are going to come out of this and you're going to love it.
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Because it's great.
And I have to tell you, too, is that someone talked to me when I was at the Four Seasons, was it yesterday or day before? Someone asked me in the elevator what I thought of this movie. And then they said, well, I didn't really see any of the other movies in the MCU. And I literally said to the person, well, you either need to go back and watch those movies or just don't bother watching this because... Going to see this without having seen the
other
ones,
it's not going
to
make any sense.
There's no point.
Yeah.
There's no point.
Yeah. It's not going to make any sense. Okay, so my favorite is Black Panther. And then, what were the other ones again, real quick?
Guardians 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok, Civil War, and Doctor Strange.
I think the only one I kind of didn't like was Civil War, but all the other ones, I really like them. I like them all a lot.
This one's interesting for me because I agree with you. I think Black Panther by far the strongest. Doctor Strange, I really loved.
Doctor Strange was the bomb. It was good.
I loved it.
Benedict Benedict Cumberbatch, come on. Sherlock Holmes coming into a superhero movie, I couldn't handle it.
Well, that and also the visual, Scott Derrickson, who did the direction for this movie, just the like the Inception type direction that they had, it was especially great. At the end, like it was great. And Benedict is fantastic.
He's fantabulous.
And then I really did not like Guardians 2 or Spider-Man Homecoming.
I remember you saying that about those two. I think we had a discussion about that at some point. And I was like, I liked Spider-Man Homecoming because I liked Tom Holland. I thought he made a great Spider-Man. And I really liked the fact that his little friend was like this little pudgy Asian dude.
Oh, yeah,
I loved that about that movie.
What that movie was trying to be too self-aware for me. Like, they kept, like, making references to, like, hey, we're like Johnny. Did you get this joke where you're like kind of like John Hughes right now?
I love that.
It was very kitschy.
Yeah. It was very kitschy, and I really liked it.
But
for that.
Michael Keaton in that movie,
Spider-Man is kitschy.
Michael Keaton in that movie, like, sold me. I love him
was
in that
so
movie.
Against type in that movie. Yeah. He was so evil and nasty. I was like, ooh, I love this.
Yes,
fantastic. It was great. I loved him. And then, the Guardians. I just like the Guardian film straight up because of the soundtrack. Like, I'll go ahead. The soundtrack sells me on Guardians every time. But I really liked how in this one they investigated the romantic relationship with Gamora and Star-Lord a little bit more. So I was liking that. Like, it wasn't so much push and pull anymore. It was more like, okay, this is probably going to happen. I love how they showed all those old school cameos with Sylvester Stallone and all those people were in it at the end, the end. I loved that. I love whenever they do stuff like that. That makes me so
happy. What ruined that movie for me was it felt like everything from the first movie, like they turned it up like to 10. So like, you know, one of the things like everyone loved about the first movie was Rocket being very sarcastic and mean towards everyone. So in this movie, they made him a complete a-hole. That's like, he's like, all I'm going to do is I'm going to keep insulting you and I'm going to keep insulting you and I'm going to keep insulting you. And then, you know, I do love Groot. And, you know, it's funny because this goes to show you in the first Guardians how effective he was. Mm-hmm. And then also in Infinity War, how effective he was because it wasn't the core focus. In the second Guardians, I felt like they just had the baby Groot and it was like so much like, oh, we have nothing else to show. Here's baby Groot again. Dance, baby Groot, do something. And it was just so overkill for me.
I could agree with you on that one. Because I was like, when I saw Infinity War, I was like, does Groot seem extra tall? It's like, why is Groot so tall? Did he grow between the last movie and this one? I was like, dang, he looked like a tree. Yeah. He looked like a big old oak tree. I'm like, what is happening? I'm glad you said that because I was like,
yeah,
what's going on with Groot? Yeah.
So we should play the trailer for this before we actually get into more of our spoiler conversation for Avengers.
We're just letting people have it.
Avengers. I hope they remember you.
No!
I do hope those that survive remember everything.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So now we can go full tilt.
Now we can go full tilt.
Yep.
Okay. So for those of you that are watching, I need for you to know it's going to be a lot of spoiler alerts in this. And if you don't want to hear it and you haven't seen the film yet, I suggest you turn this off right now. Now, having said that and giving you that warning, here we go.
Okay.
Thanos, voiced by James Brolin.
Josh Brolin.
I always get him and his dad mixed up. Josh Brolin was everything.
Yes.
He was everything. But what I really appreciated about what they did with his character, they didn't make him like pure evil. They gave him that moment with his daughter where you saw him have that humanity moment, but he wasn't there for very long. I was like, dang, he turned on her real quick. But and that made me feel some kind of way. It's like, how you just gonna like toss your daughter off a ledge? Like, that was harsh. That hurt my heart. I'm like, I don't know how I felt about that. There's some things like that that made me go, I don't know how I feel about this. I don't know how I felt about the fact that you're absolutely right. When you talked about when Wakanda showed up, everybody was like, yeah, Wakanda. And then Wakanda was in the, like, from the trailers, some of the trailers I saw, yes, you get the impression that Wakanda is going to be a little bit more present in the film than what it is. It's like the Wakanda stuff lasts all of maybe 10 minutes total. I was kind of like, can we get the black people a little bit more to do in this movie? I mean, I know, you know, I know it's the Avengers Infinity War, but if you're going to have everybody in there, let's give everybody equal footing, which I felt like was not the case. I'm like, can we just like, can we see the, I was
it's
upset.
Okay. No, it's fine. Really listen, I brought this up. We did our first LA Online Film Critics podcast, and mm-hmm. I brought the same point up.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with you. It's like there's so much hype built around Black Panther right now. And I mean, he really, you know, his movie and that every character in that movie really held their own. And it was such a big deal that you almost at times, even though there's a lot going on in this movie, you can't help but think at one point, I'm like, when we get into Wakanda? I felt that way too.
I was like, and then we got there and then we left as soon as we got there.
There's a very weird shift in this movie where I feel like the Captain America types of story arc that's going on in this movie with his team
mm-hmm.
is very much playing second fiddle to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's because this is only one half of a movie. You mm-hmm. know, Avengers 4 is going to pick up right where this mm-hmm. left off, mm-hmm. and then we're going to be able to get into, I think, more of that side of the story. So this was all about kind of getting the Infinity Stones and the pairing of the other characters, and they were more at the forefront of this movie.
Okay.
So that's how that's what I take away from it.
Okay. But having said that,
yes,
they could have edited a little bit more in.
Sure.
And having said that, I don't know how much of it they actually shot, because they may have shot that Wakanda stuff in the middle of them shooting Black Panther.
They probably did.
You know what I mean? So if that was the case, then they probably were short on time and short on resources and funding and all of that. So, you know, I mean, it could be a plethora of different reasons as to why.
Well, that's the thing that people always forget is that the Avengers was probably done like a long, like probably like a year ago, in all fairness, because, you know, they go through test screenings for these movies. They go through a whole bunch of like different edits for the movies. So that takes anywhere from 6 months to a year, depending on the size of the film.
Right.
So, I mean, like Guillermo told me when we were at our awards dinner that he already saw Jurassic World 2. So he saw that back in January. So that means that he saw some sort of cut of it. It's probably not the final cut, but he saw a cut of it.
Right.
So that's the same thing what happened with this. This movie was probably done well before Black Panther even came out and it got so much box office success.
Yeah. And maybe they didn't put as much of Black Panther in it because they weren't sure how Black Panther was going to do at the time.
Probably another good reason.
They probably underestimated how well Black Panther was going to do at the box office. But I think the Marvel Universe did a wonderful job of incorporating everybody from all of those films, except for Wakanda, everybody seemed to get very equal footing with their storylines, with their characters. It seemed to be very equal for the most part. And they gave a lot of energy and time to Elizabeth Olsen's character.
Yes. Scarlet Witch.
Yes. They gave her character a lot of energy and time, which I was kind of glad to see, because her character was glossed over a little bit before.
Right. It was always the Black Widow show, which is Scarlett Johansson's character. Yeah.
Exactly. So I was glad that they gave her some love. So there was that. But I'm telling you, that movie, I was so tired after I saw that movie. And it had nothing to do with the fact that it was 2.5 hours long. The 2.5 hours actually went really quickly for me. But I was just exhausted. And I was like, I am crying at a superhero movie. Who does that? I was crying.
Yeah.
Like tears.
A lot of people were. I mean, I looked around that theater once the movie ended. I mean, people were like in shock. It was interesting to see that.
Oh my goodness. But even though I cried, even though I shed a couple of tears, it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I still had a great time with it.
I want to talk about Thor, because you brought this up, and you and I have the same feelings on this as well, which is great, because I love when we get to agree every once in a while. And I'm glad to hear you say that you thought that Thor was one of the weaker characters in the MCU.
Absolutely.
But in this movie, they open the movie with him. You get to see Well, this is spoiler free. So this is spoilers. So you get to see Loki go. You get to see Idris Elba's character go. And then he's just there. You know, he has nobody left.
Wait, just pause on that for a second. So when they killed Idris's character, I'm like, of course the black man got killed first. Oh. I saw that and I hollered. I was like, why are they gonna kill the black man first? They gonna get rid of the Black Panther too? I'm just saying what's happening. I was sitting in my seat having that whole inner dialogue and laughing at myself. It was hilarious.
Well, I would have probably said that too if I actually cared at all about his character. But it's like, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot you're in this movie. Okay. Like, yeah. That had no effect on me whatsoever. I was like,
why are you killing the black man? But it was hard to look at him, but it was hard to look at his face though, because he had them orange eyeballs. That was kind of hard for me. I was like, I would look and I'd kind of be like this, like looking but not looking. I'm like, I don't know.
But when Loki goes, I mean, that was, you know, that's been my saving grace of these movies, these Thor movies, and to kind of see him go. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm like, why couldn't they kill Thor? Kill Thor.
Do you think they're going to do another Thor movie? They couldn't possibly.
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, but from that very standpoint, from the very beginning, you kind of get this, you feel this sympathy towards Thor for the first time. I felt like he's always been the comedic guy. He's always been like the handsome heartthrob, whatever it is. They play that for a little bit with the Guardians. Mm-hmm. But then he has that emotional scene where he does that one tear. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I got you. I feel for you. And then when he comes down with the hammer, when he comes into Wakanda with
that
the hammer.
That was awesome.
That's like, I'm like, Thor, you finally rock. You finally rock.
Yes. He was like saving it. I'm like, yes, go ahead. Ugh. I was just, and the other thing that I kind of love with the exception of Iron Man is that most of the women in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they're strong women. They're not wimpy. They're not wah, 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 except for Gwyneth Paltrow's character, because she's kind of like, you know, she just kind of like wait for Robert Downey Jr. to roll around. And she's like, like that whole phone conversation that they had where she's like, where are you? When are you coming home? I'm like, really? Are we going to do this? While all the other women are throwing spears.
I know.
And lassos and stuff. We're going to have her whining about when Iron Man's coming home. I couldn't take that.
Yeah.
That was killing me.
Yeah.
I can't even.
I mean, the women in this universe, I mean, Gamora for me, again, we're going back to the Guardians. She was, I've always loved Zoe Saldana in this role.
Mm-hmm. But Nebula too, I love her.
Yeah, but I've always felt like they weren't given that much to do. Like they were kind of like, oh, you're the love interest of Chris, you know, Chris Pratt, Star-Lord, whatever. And here she had such, you got to hear about her backstory.
Yes.
You got that relationship with Thanos.
And her as a little girl.
Yeah, yeah. And they picked such a great actress because it looked just like,
I know. Didn't she? Yeah. She looked just like her. I was like,
I know. They did such a great job. What I said about this movie in my review is that they did such a great job showcasing the characters that I felt like were always forgotten. Like you mentioned Scarlet Witch. She was ignored in the other movies.
She was.
She got some moments to shine here. Mm-hmm. Gamora, very much like a secondary character. She gets her, even Nebula, she gets her moment. And Thor gets his moment. Like, this was remarkable to see these secondary characters finally come to the forefront. They got to come front and center. They get to have their moment. And they get to be some of the highlights of this movie.
Okay. Let's just talk about the scene with Nebula when we first see
her. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was kind of hard to take. Yeah. Like, her body being pulled apart. I'm like, that hurts. That's not even happening to me. And I know it's CG special effects, but that was making my teeth hurt. It was very uncomfortable to watch. Very uncomfortable to watch. I was like, oh, my God. Can they please just put her back together? I can't take it.
Yeah. I mean, she really held her own, too, in that. And, I mean, the scene where she comes in at the end, where not at the very end, but like in the third act, when she comes in and when there's this big fight between Iron Man and Spider-Man and Doctor Strange with Thanos, that's a very emotional scene where she gets to like reveal like, no, she's not here anymore. She's gone.
And that moment where Star-Lord had, that was just awful.
That's some of the best acting I've seen from Chris Pratt too.
I know. And that's where I boohooed. Cause I was like, when he finds out that his girl is done, this is not going to bode well. And I was, it was just, there were so many, but that And the other, this is the other thing that I kind of can't stand, but kind of like all at the same time, like I have a love-hate relationship with it. These Marvel and Disney movies, they make you sit through the credits.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's always a spoiler at the end. I kind of love them for that because people disregard all of the work that went into making those films. Those credits run for like 10 minutes.
Oh, they do.
And there's hundreds and hundreds of people that put together what we just saw for 2.5 hours. It's only respect to kind of sit there and give them their homage. All you're doing is sitting there and watching their name scroll on a screen. But that's respect. At the same time, I'm like, could we not do that just as a means of putting a spoiler at the end to make people stay and watch through
it? Yeah, I mean, you know? Here's the thing. There's two. When this movie ended, I had feelings, and some of them were sad, but then some of them, like, I snapped back into reality, and I was kind of like, okay. So my first initial thought, I turned to Ashley as soon as this was over. I said, boy, that ending would have been so much more effective if I didn't know there was 5 other movies coming out within the next year and a half.
Exactly my point.
Yeah.
Exactly my point.
And then sitting through the credits to just get a build-up to Captain Marvel, it's like, okay, like, I would have loved if, like, we sat through the credits and nothing came up and it just said, you know, Thanos would return. You know, me and Lewis yesterday, we were having a conversation about this, and he said, wouldn't it have been great if we just sat through the credits and there was no end scene? And I'm like, yes, it would have been a nice change of pace.
I know.
And because it ended on such a risky note and such a dark note that I feel like adding that into it, like, it just kind of like, it's like,
it wrecked my nerves. Yeah. It wrecked my nerves so bad. I was like, what is happening right now? I can't even take it. But you know what does not wreck my nerves? Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition that's hosted by our own sweet, dear, cute, lovely, and fuzzy Maria Menounos, and it drops every Friday on iTunes. It features celebrity and influencer interviews. It has secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of life. We can all use that advice. From health to wellness to career to relationships and finances and so much more. Let our Maria be the big sister that you always wanted, as she is for us here at AfterBuzz TV. So go to iTunes, give those 5 stars, subscribe to Conversation with Maria Menounos for free. Be sure to rate and comment. And when you do, let Miss Maria know that Scott Menzel and Carla Renata from Black Tomato sent you over there. Don't forget that, because that's the most important part, other than checking out Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition on iTunes. Cool. Every Friday it drops. Check it out. So back to this conversation.
Yeah, no problem. What did you, what was your favorite scene in this movie?
Oh, man. There's so many. My favorite scene, the one that haunts me and sticks in my mind the most, is the scene between Thanos and Gamora, where they discuss why she's kind of turning on him, like right before he throws her over the cliff. That whole conversation was really, it was heartwarming, because it was that only moment that we got to see him be, other than when she was a little girl, got to see him be emotional about being her dad. And we got to see the breadth and the depth of how torturous it was for him to do what he knew he had to do in order to move forward. That broke my heart. It really did. I'm such a romantic. So, and the other scene that broke my heart was with Elizabeth Olsen's Secret Witch with her man, and that scene where him having to take that stone out of his head, he knew that that meant he was gonna go bye bye, and he knew that she had to be the one to do it. And the fact that she, and they thought it was gonna end up that way, but they were kind of hoping it wouldn't. And then when it did turn out that way, and she had to do it, the anguish on her face as she was having to go through with that task broke my heart too. What else did I like? I love the fact that Groot just stomped around the whole movie talking about I Am Groot on his game.
Oh, yeah.
Playing his game, just stomping through, playing I Am Groot, saying I Am Groot. That made me laugh out loud. It was just so stupid. But yeah, right now, those are the ones that stick out for me the most.
Yeah, I think the Thor scene, all the Thor scenes for me really worked in this movie, in which I already talked about. So I'm going to talk about the pairing of Doctor Strange with Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. I
really
that.
Liked it.
I liked the banter with them.
Yeah,
it
because
was good.
I was so... Okay, maybe we'll agree on this too.
Okay.
One of the things that bothers me about the Captain America movies is the back and forth between Iron Man and Captain America. Like, it's just, there's so much of it, and it's like such a central point of the movie. Like, it's almost like a plot device. Like, they just keep using it to go back and forth, back and forth, right. back and forth. But with this one, it was like a nice change of pace because it was more of an intelligent back and forth banter mm-hmm. where like they were actually criticizing each other because of like their decisions, mm-hmm. not like just for like fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really like, it was like one ego stroking the other ego and like, who's going to have the bigger ego in this scene.
But that's the crutch of those two characters.
Right.
The thing about those two characters is that they're both very sarcastic,
yes.
and they both have some kind of, you know, off the cuff poppy kind of commentary toward each other and other people. So the fact that they were doing it to each other was actually very entertaining.
Yeah. And I thought like both those characters being put in the same room and having different ideas
mm-hmm.
and kind of being able to bounce the ideas off one another mm-hmm. also worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I really liked about the movie is actually every one of the Guardians, with a very special, like, shout out to Gamora and Thanos, because that relationship and that whole storyline
was really
was
special.
Great because mm-hmm. again, just like we've talked about with other MCU films is that the villain is usually very weak outside of, Doctor Strange, villain. And then, of course, Eric Killmonger from Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
There really hasn't been that great of villains, mm-hmm. you know, like Loki's a great villain, but he's also just, he's more of comedic,
yeah,
you know,
he's more of a comic relief.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But to have someone where there's like, this guy is misleading, you know, like Thanos is misleading. Like part of his reasoning, you kind of understand where he's coming from. He's mm-hmm. like, you know, maybe we can help people by eliminating the other half of people because then we would save humanity because everyone could be treated as equal. Mm-hmm. That's like pretty much what he was saying mm-hmm. in this movie.
Yeah.
So like part of me like can understand where he's coming from. And then it's like, there's a lot of questioning in this movie about what is it worth? Is it worth losing me, you know, Gamora? Is it worth losing, you know, his people? And he decides that it is. But I feel like that's a very ambitious take for a Marvel movie, something mm-hmm. that's so popcorn entertainment to kind of bring up something with so much depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you anticipate that this film will do at the box office, or do we know already?
Oh yes, so it's you know how much this movie opened with? $250 million.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, this is the biggest movie. I think it's the biggest movie of all time. It's bigger than The Force Awakens so far.
That's going to be interesting to see what happens at the end of the weekend. How much it made,
and then you know that Black Panther. You know, we talked about this.
$600 million worldwide.
Yeah,
didn't
it did. But the interesting thing is, it's number five still at the box office.
Well, so because it'll be interesting to see what happens.
How much
with
it keeps going,
yeah.
Because people are going to want like a break from Infinity War to go back to see this.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing Marvel knows what they're doing is that people go see these movies 2, 3 times, 4 times. So there's a lot of replay value for these movies, and having these two strong of a movie
mm-hmm.
Movies in theaters right now,
mm-hmm.
it's interesting. So I do want to like just point out what I think is going to happen in the next film.
Okay.
Just because I don't want anyone, I mentioned this on my podcast and I want to say it again just because I don't want anyone to steal it. So as we know, there's been a lot of conversation lately about Chris Evans being done with the Captain America character.
Yes.
And one of my things that I think is going to actually happen is most of the people who die in this movie are going to come back. Come on. You know that Black Panther is going to come back. You know that Doctor Strange is going to come back. They just got their first movie. You know they're coming back.
Gamora
okay.
ain't coming back.
No, I don't think Gamora's coming back.
Gamora's
no.
not coming
no,
back.
No, I don't think Loki's coming back either.
Nope.
But I'm thinking everyone after the gauntlet smash is going to come back. So what I think is going to happen is something I don't know the specifics, but I think something's going to happen to Captain America to kind of clean him out for the next movie. Mm-hmm. And Brie Larson, who's playing Captain Marvel, is going to replace. She's going to be the person who's going to replace him. And then she'll be like at the forefront for the next couple of movies.
I like Brie Larson. I love her a lot. I like her a lot.
She's so incredible. Okay. But that's what I think is going to happen. And I do think, like you just said, I think everyone besides maybe like, oh, and Idris Elba, of course, is gone.
Yeah, he's done.
He's already been gone. Like he never even existed.
He never had a chance.
No. But yeah, so I think those people are going to come back. And then it'll be interesting to see if, like you were talking about, how much more Black Panther and the ladies of Black Panther get to have a play in the next one. And
that would be real interesting to see how that goes down. I'm really anticipating to see, you know, what happens with that. Yeah. Cool. So that does it for this edition of Black Tomatoes. So next week,
We got a lot of movies,
starting with Tully with Charlize Theron. So we'll be talking about that.
We got Overboard.
Yep, Overboard, Tully. What else? There's a couple other ones,
right?
There's
another one, yes. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, we'll talk about it next week.
Oh, Bad Samaritan.
Bad Samaritan. Okay, cool. So go to iTunes, y'all. Give us that 5-star rating if you get an opportunity. Hit us up in the chat room at BHL Online. Talk to us on Twitter. We will answer you back. I am your host, Carla Renata. You can find me across all social media platforms at The Curvy Critic. And where can we find you, Scott?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Other Scott M. And on Facebook, just using my name, Movie Man Menzel. And you can go to We Live Entertainment. Thank you so much, as always, for watching this show. We really do appreciate it so much.
We appreciate y'all so very much. And we're going to go out with that Marvel music so that you can get pumped up and go see Avengers Infinity War if you have not already. See you next week for the 11th edition of Black Tomatoes on BHL Online. Live.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.